From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Standing in my kitchen the other day, I had a craving, specifically for sesame or peanut noodles, for something I eat when I do takeout or go out to eat, because with such flavors, we think we can't do it, like a good curry or Middle Eastern food or Mexican flavors, or those Chinese restaurant-style noodles. Well, today's topic is how to spice it up in our home cooking and some of the latest cookbooks to help us do so or to gift to others who might need a flavor nudge. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Alexandra Stafford of the Alexandra's Kitchen website, alexandracooks.com, and author of the wonderful cookbook Bread, Toast, Crumbs, is here to help us get a little confidence about using spices to cook some of our favorite takeout flavors at home. We've been digging into the latest crop of cookbooks together for inspiration, she and I have. Hi, Allie.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, spice it up.
I know, right?
I know. I can't believe it's already a year since we did our last edition of the Holiday Gift Cookbook Roundup.
Is that possible?
I know. And so we went browsing, just to tell people the process so far. We went browsing this fall together, and we've been emailing and chatting and whatever. And we saw that there's lots of, like, sort of ethnic cookbooks of every possible flavor palette, more all the time. And so we thought, hey, why don't we do that as sort of a narrow focus within all the cookbooks out there? So that's what this year's roundup is going to be.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the few that we've selected to chat about too. They're just written by people who really, really know their stuff, and they've made it really accessible.
So maybe we should start with the new book that sort of has the title that says it all, which is Mastering Spice. What do you think?
Yeah.
Mastering Spice.
I think that's a great place to start.
Okay. So what do you think?
what I love about it is that it's, at first glance, you might, and this is actually what I thought. I looked at it and I thought, gosh, do I really need a book all about spices and spice blends? But when you dig into it, it's so much more. You know, you get, he really cares about technique. So the recipes are really simple, but his whole philosophy is that you can change up the spices in countless ways, and then you have something different and something that you can't get bored of. Mm-hmm. And I have yet to cook anything, but I'm really excited about his roasted vegetable recipe for a number of reasons. One, he says that he lowers the heat. It's a little bit lower than I'm always, you know, roasting vegetables at like 450 convection until they're like nearly black. And his is like, you know, he turns the temperature way down and they cook for about an hour. And part of this is so that the spices don't burn during that hour of cooking. But he also roasts them with a little bit of, with olive oil and vinegar. And his spice mix is so interesting. There's sumac, there's fennel, smoked paprika, Aleppo pepper, and cinnamon, which is something I would never think to add to roasted vegetables. But, you know, in winter, I feel, how many sheet pans of roasted root vegetables do you do? And by March, it's like you can't think you could roast another root. But if you have all these different spice blends, it's like,
right,
you could keep going.
So he is Lior Lev Sercars. And I watched some of his like videos and read the book, you know, started reading the book and so forth. And it turns out he got into spice, and he actually even sells spices. He says he grew up in a kibbutz in the 1970s where all the food was brown and mushy, he says.
Right.
So he was like, this was his protest cope with that youth is to have this passion for spice and mastering spice. And like you're saying, you know, it's not the expected combinations. Like he says, I use curry spices in dessert and cinnamon on meat. No one spice or blend belongs to one culture or place. And so there's almost like these template recipes, like you're saying, roasted vegetables. And then he does them five or six ways so that if you can just figure out how to roast vegetables or how to make, quote, creamy carrot soup, Then he has that one with like smoky paprika and cumin, or smoky cumin and chipotle, or basil, fennel, oregano, or turmeric and lime leaves. Like there's six different creamy carrots. If you just make creamy carrot soup, you don't have to make the same one every time.
Yeah, I thought that one actually looked delicious to me too, because then he shows how you can turn that into a sauce and like coat it with pasta and top it with poppy seeds, and it looks totally delicious.
Yeah.
And I have a recipe for like a butternut squash sauce, and I've never thought to do that with carrots, but it makes total sense.
Yeah.
And I like his, back to the roasted vegetables, like one of the variations is you can roast the vegetables with wedges of citrus, which is something I have not done, but which sounds so nice.
Oh, the picture
winter.
Was beautiful, you know, too. Yeah.
And then you can also, you know, I think of his master, you know, root vegetable recipe is something like 5 pounds of vegetables. And then you can, you know, you can use those vegetables in a frittata. So it's very just like practical. They really look simple and practical, and just something. I mean, he says this, and lots of people say this, but you know, his goal is, I hope you can kind of master the ideas and then never turn to this book again. But you kind of get the sense that you could do that once you get his techniques down.
Right, right. Maybe 2-3 years ago, in 2016, I think it was, from him, I got a book called, a big, almost like encyclopedic book, although it did have recipes, called Mastering. It was called something else, The Spice Companion,
uh-huh.
A Guide to the World of Spices. And it was like, it was like an encyclopedia. It was like, it told you everything about like where they come from and, you know,
wow.
how they're used. And so he's done a number of books about combining spices and using spices and understanding spices and getting your confidence, as I said, because of that kibbutz upbringing.
Yeah.
Mushy brown food will do it to anybody.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I think that's a great one. I was really pleased, you know. I know we both downloaded it.
Yeah. No, it seems like a really good one. And this one, too, has, like, in the back, in the glossary, there's an index of spices, and it tells you, you know, how to use them and what to use them with. So it, you know, it sounds like sort of like an abridged version of his first book.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were, like, variants on penne, risotto. There were, like, chickpeas, you know, different ways to use. One of my favorite beans or whatever to eat. You know, chickpeas, like you could just turn it into so many different things. And I only have maybe like one or two ways that I do it. But the idea, like I like to put them just in with my red sauce, you know, and I'll have like brown rice or pasta and, you know, tomato sauce, and I'll put chickpeas in just for an extra something, but and with parmesan and whatever, or put them in like coconut curry spinach and then put them in there. But this is like, this had a whole bunch of other ways just to use that basic staple, the chickpea.
No, there's a lot in this book. And he does, I think he does really try to help you not be intimidated by, you know, not thinking. Like he gives the example of chipotle chili powder, which people think is, you know, you would use it in chili or Mexican dishes, but he'll use it in something like shakshuka. So it's not, you shouldn't be afraid to play around. And if there's spices you like, you know, it's a spice after all, you know, you're looking for heat and smokiness.
Yeah. He says this is like a vegetable heavy cookbook or a non-meat heavy cookbook because at home that's what he tends to cook. So it's not that it's a vegetarian, it's not, you know, marketed as a vegetarian cookbook per se, but, you know, and there are like flatbreads and there are egg dishes and so forth, but it's not super heavy meat stuff, this particular cookbook.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we're voting thumbs up.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a good gift book too. I really do.
Definitely.
Yeah. So what else are you excited about?
Oh gosh, where next?
What about our crazy world of Korean cooking?
Manji's big book of Korean cooking. That would be a good one to talk about.
She's amazing. What a fun thing for us to sort of delve into together.
I know.
Yeah.
She is hilarious. And I sort of feel like I'm only just discovering her. She has, an enormous following. And I've been following her on Instagram, but I really hadn't taken a deep dive into her videos until we started talking about these books.
The YouTube channel is, and some of them are like, you know, 500,000 or a million, you know, views, and their videos are fantastic, and they're so fun, and she's so upbeat.
She is so funny, yeah. I've made the one dish from her book. It's the Japchae, and it's and I actually watched the video recently, and it made me really happy to see in the book, in her new book, she has totally simplified the recipe. She used to, in her original version, she sort of sautés every, so first of all, Japchae is like a very, very well-known Korean dish and very popular. And she says, actually, if you make it for a party, you will get a lot of attention and be very popular.
Okay. But good to know.
She's so funny. But it's made with the like translucent glass noodles that are made with sweet potato starch.
Right.
And I was worried about that I was going to be able to find it, but I went to my, she has this excellent shopping guide in the beginning with photos of everything. I went to my Asian market. I found them easily. And I made a vegetarian version, so I didn't have to saute the meat first. So if you make a vegetarian version, you literally just, it's like an un-stir fry. You just layer everything in a pan. You soak the noodles first, but you make the sauce, which is just a few ingredients stirred together, layer the vegetables, the noodles, the sauce, there's spinach. You cover the pan for 10 minutes and cook it, and then you uncover it, and it's done. It was
wow.
It was amazing to not have to stir fry anything. And the noodles are so, it really feels like something you would only, like I've had this at a Korean restaurant, and it's often served as like, I'm probably not saying it right, but the banchan, like the little dishes that are served like with the meat or just as, you know, as a side dish to any of the main courses. But it totally feels like something you wouldn't be able to do at home because the noodles feel so exotic, but there's really nothing to it. You know, the dressing is sesame oil, soy sauce. It's things that you have, and it's really just, if you can find those noodles, you can make this, really traditional dish, and it's so tasty.
She has this, I mean, she really speaks to the, you know, she really got a lot of hand-me-down learning from other women, and she's traveled mm-hmm. around to learn from other Korean cooks, and, you know, it's just, it has this heartfelt, like this enthusiasm that just makes you want to try all these dishes. At least I felt like I wanted to be a devotee, you know, right away.
Definitely. Yeah. She says that she, she learned from the women around her. And that makes sense. You know, it makes sense to me that that's why YouTube is sort of her medium of choice, because it really helps to see the techniques demonstrated.
Yes.
But she also writes in the book that videos are great, but they don't show the larger picture of how recipes fit together as a cuisine. And this book is huge, and it really does feel like a comprehensive guide to Korean cooking, and their step-by-step photos for almost every single recipe. And she traveled to a Buddhist temple in the mountains to meet and cook with a group of nuns at a monastery. And she dedicated a chapter to all those recipes, which are vegan.
Yes.
So it's really cool. She's just a character.
Like, I love the mountain style of plating up the food, serving the food. It's like literally what it sounds like a mountain in the middle of the plate. Not this like fussy restaurant-y kind of presentation, right?
Right. Not the precious like tiny amount of food on a small plate. She says she loves she loves the mountain style plating, and she said it reflects their most important value, which is generosity, which I loved reading.
Yeah. No, I totally. So it's Mang Chi's Big Book of Korean Cooking, and her name is Maanghchi, if people are wondering what we're saying. And it's not like you have to have 1,000 things in her pantry. I went to her website, and she has sort of like a mm-hmm. beginner's pantry where if you don't want to get a million different ingredients. So what are some of the quickies that you have to have, though, or that you come up again and again that you think for the Korean style cooking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a minimalist, like soy sauce, sesame oil, garlic, scallions, sesame seeds.
Yeah.
I would start there, and then from there, find a recipe that you like, and then maybe go get that extra bottle, like I'm not going to say it right, but the gochujang, which is like the Korean hot paste.
Yes.
And that's pretty easy to find in regular grocery stores now.
Yeah.
But it's like, I went out and searched for those noodles, and actually you probably could order them on Amazon. But they, the minimalist Korean pantry would not have to travel far and wide for.
Right. So where do you want to go next?
sitting here eating a tahini blondie, so maybe we should talk about the baba.
A tahini blondie. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So Adina Sussman, I love her. She is, you know, she's been working in food media for a long time, and she's co-authored 11 books, including both of Chrissy Teigen. So she's just a very reliable, I feel like, recipe writer. Uh-huh. And in general, but in any case, this is her first book alone. So baba means everything is cool, everything is awesome. And it's really like, you just get a real picture, a real window into her world in Tel Aviv. And it's a really beautiful book. Her day sounds dreamy. She wakes up every day and goes to her market, which is the Shuka Carmel, and does her shopping. And, you know, the ocean breeze is, hitting her. And it sounds like such an amazing life. And you kind of, you know, Sababa means everything is awesome. And that's how you feel as you're like flipping through the pages.
Yeah, I watched the video, the sort of, you know, book video kind of thing. And, read some of the recipes and so forth as well. But in the video, she goes to the market that you just talked about, you know.
Okay.
And like, she gets ingredients that we know dried, but she'll get them fresh, you know. And so it's like,
oh, yeah,
like the za'atar and so forth. And it's just so beautiful. And she seems so happy. So, like you said, it's all good. Everything is cool. That's what sababa means. Yeah.
Yeah. And she makes the recipes feel, the recipe I started with was her basic tahini sauce, because she says it's a recipe that's like the one thing your fridge should never be without. It's
right.
Tahini sauce. And it was delicious. I made the basic recipe, which is essentially just tahini paste, garlic, ice water, a lot of fresh lemon and salt. But she gives you like 5 variations, so you can puree it with tons of herbs, which I did, and so you get this green tahini sauce, or you can puree it with turmeric, it would be bright yellow, you can puree it with roasted beets, it'll be bright pink, and then this one is interesting, I want to do it next summer for sure, but she chars eggplant and then uses the burnt eggplant skin and purees that into the tahini sauce. So it's this charcoal gray color, and it's really pretty.
Oh, and it probably has a little bit of a smoky flavor, too.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but what I love, I really loved, so she gives suggestions with what to top it with, and I made, it was roasted Brussels sprouts, she does a stovetop, but just basically cooks quartered Brussels sprouts, pretty high heat, and then adds, she has her own, like a honey harissa sauce that she has a recipe for, but I used actually just like a purchased harissa and a little bit of honey. And, you know, it's like I've cooked Brussels sprouts a million times, but I've never, and she also tosses them with smoked paprika. Like I've never had, you know, I've never put these flavors with Brussels sprouts.
I know.
Yeah. And it was so, and I want to try roast, I want to like do like a big batch of Brussels sprouts with the same, with the smoked paprika and the harissa and a little bit of honey. And then like, you know, spread her herby green tahini sauce on a platter and keep the Brussels sprouts on top and, you know, make it more of like a side dish. She makes the recipes feel really accessible. Go ahead. Were you going to say?
No, I was going to say the smoked paprika has come up twice now already, and we're only on our third cookbook. So that's just one that maybe we want to add to our pantry if we haven't been using it, because that comes
up
in different cuisines and really has a lot of versatility that we don't necessarily, as home cooks, we don't think about, but I think it does.
Definitely, yes. Yeah, and then, I mean, this book, Adina gives a resource. There's an extensive pantry where she shows how to make, you know, harissa, and there's like even like an everything, what does she call it? I forget. Anyway, all of the things, preserved lemons, skoog, I'm probably not saying it right, her own za'atar blend, and Israeli everything spice. But she also, you know, tells you where you can buy these things if you don't want to make them from scratch.
Yes.
And even in things like pomegranate molasses, which are not that, you know, that's not that hard to find anymore, but she has a recipe for just taking pomegranate juice and reducing it with a little bit of honey, and there you have it, you know?
Yeah.
And the same thing, there's this and I've seen this both in Mastering Spice. I forget what it's called, but it's like a Persian lime, and it's dry, like a powdered.
And yes, the dried lime powder. Yeah.
And if you can't find it or you don't have time to order it, you know, she says you can use fresh lime zest and lime juice, which is so nice.
Right. So she gives you ways around having to have a million specialty items, you know. Yeah.
Right.
But
exactly.
So that we can fit in one more, I want to say, on this one, some of the things you'd want to probably have, though, in the mini sort of pantry, the harissa, the tahini, maybe date syrup? What else?
Yes.
The za'atar?
Yeah, I would say fill on the date syrup, tahini, harissa, sumac, za'atar. That would probably be where I would start.
Yeah.
And then,
spices make a great gift. I've given gift certificates to places like Kalustians. I'll give the link with the transcript of the show.
Yes.
I've given, we mentioned at the beginning with Mastering Spice, his store, which we can give, the online store, you know, he has beautiful spice blends. That's a great gift to give people, too, if you want to encourage. So maybe one of these types of cookbooks plus an interesting selection of some spices or a gift certificate. So
Yes, definitely. Or like a nice bottle of tahini. The tahini blondies are so interesting. I think the tahini, it kind of cuts the sweetness.
Interesting,
There's sesame seeds in it and cardamom. They're so good.
So we have a couple few minutes. What about the Gaijin cookbook?
This is the one I'm really, really loving. It's funny. This is the first year I've downloaded Kindle books. I've never done it.
And for cookbooks,
And this one I think I'm going to have to purchase because it feels like his soul. And I feel like the Kindle version isn't doing it justice.
And this is Ivan Orkin. I don't know if that's pronouncing Ivan is correct. And
Ivan Orkin. He wrote Ivan Ramen. Which was about his ramen restaurant in Japan. But so he wrote it with Chris Yang, who I think he also wrote his last book with. And it's just beautifully written. And like in some, it's like the story of a guy who's been like drawn to Japan his whole life, but still feels like an outsider. The word gaijin means
outsider, foreigner.
So he says he's lived in Japan for 3 decades, speaks Japanese, has opened 2 ramen shops, is raising 3 half Japanese children, and yet he's still a gaijin. But the goal of the book is to he feels that Japanese food gets treated with this over-the-top reverence, and he wants to dispel the idea that all Japanese food is like precious and high-flying. Japanese families are just like any family. They're busy, you know, people are busy. They have picky kids, their parties, their potlucks, their food for all of these occasions. The recipes, a lot of them are simple. He does say, you know, he has some recipes that take a couple days, like dan dan noodles and, you know, hand rolls, I think there's like a tamaki party chapter or something like that. But most of the, this is one of the best tips. He suggests buying frozen udon noodles because they're so hard to find. So the last time I was at the Asian market, I bought frozen noodles and I made his stir fry udon noodles. It was so easy. I don't know how we are on time, but in terms of so many of the recipes in the book it's soy sauce, mirin, sake. If you have those and a little sesame oil,
exactly.
You have those 4 things.
Exactly.
You can make
right.
so many recipes in the book.
Right.
But the part also that I'm loving about the book is that he really, and I haven't read all the passages, but he really reflects on what he's learned from the Japanese culture as a whole. And they're kind of funny because he talks about how he really had to learn he says care for others, not getting in others' way, reading the air. But he elaborates on all of them, and they're just funny stories.
Right.
And,
so it's definitely an Eastern. It has an Eastern feeling to it, not just the recipes.
yes.
So we're down to the wire. We only have less than a minute, but Yeah, so we need some miso, some soy sauce there again, which we're going to use in a few of these different things. We noticed, and we'll give some names with the transcript of some, like there were so many New Mexican cookbooks, for instance. And,
oh, I know.
You know, yes. We haven't gotten to Ama or any of the ones, the Tex-Mex Kitchen Ama. We haven't gotten to them, but there were like a whole bunch of new ones. So we'll give some more suggestions. We'll have a book giveaway with the transcript, and we'll have more information on both of our websites. But again, like help people spice it up, encourage people, try one of these types of cookbooks and maybe some fun ingredients for a friend as a really nice, happy nudge for the holiday gift, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I think that would make that like such a nice gift.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Allie. I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Okay. Yeah,
all right.
Definitely.
We'll keep downloading cookbooks together.
Perfect.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all of the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at Facebook or on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and cooking meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.